Chapter 7. Ethereality.
I really need some coffee, Kara said as she stretched. She and Ragel walked into the living room. Kara opened the blinds and enjoyed the bright sunlight. With coffee cup in hand, Kara strolled outside with Ragel. The phone buzzed, and Kara answered.
Penelope.
Yes?
Listen carefully.
Joanne Carson, RN, manager, 1:20 p.m., two-day, back door. She will meet you. Park in the west side lot. Bring Ragel with service dog vest. She will meet you.
Kara arrived at the Pinecrest Nursing Home at 1 p.m. and drove to a small hill overlooking the west side of the building. She watched as three young men, dressed in white coats with stethoscopes draped around their necks, passed a joint between them. Kara couldn't hear their conversation, although she could see them quite clearly at the back door of the nursing home. She would meet the manager, registered nurse Carson, in less than 20 minutes. The young men finished their visit. The taller one pulled a brash of keys from his belt and unlocked the back door.
Great way to start your afternoon shift, thought Kara. Even though pot was legal, it was not allowed within medical facilities, nor to be used by patients inside, even if their doctors prescribed marijuana as a drug. Kara parked her car as designated and walked to the back door. Exactly at 1:20 p.m., the door opened. A stately and commanding woman greeted Kara.
Thank you for coming, wearing PPE, and bringing your service dog. Please call me Joanne, stated the manager.
I appreciate your assistance, responded Kara. The two women shook hands, and Joanne motioned to Kara to follow her. The hallway was completely clear. Joanne raised a key from her pocket and unlocked the first door to the left. As the door closed behind them, Kara felt a shaky, yet ponderous, shadowy energy.
You have 15 minutes. The guard will return at 1:50. I will be outside the door. The patient's name is Abby.
Kara glared at Joanne. Her name is Abby? Abby.
Yes, her nickname. From what her mom told me, she's had this name since she was a baby. Joanne left the room.
Kara looked down at Ragel, lightly loosened his leash, and moved her attention to Abby, who was sitting in a wheelchair parked under the only window in the room. The 3-foot-wide by 18-inch-high window provided natural light from its 7-foot height above the floor. Ragel's nails clicked on the vinyl flooring that mimicked the look of birchwood. Abby's bony hands were clenched and coiled up under her chin. She was dressed in black knit slacks and a smock with blue cartoon characters playing on a black background. From her chest to her ankles, she was covered with a polyester blanket. Her feet were drooped, toes pointing downward, foot drop due to cerebral infarction, CVA, cerebral vascular accident, stroke. Abby wore white socks. She made soft moaning sounds. Her mouth stayed open, showing a dry, cracked tongue. Her dentures were hardly discernible. Rhythmically, her brown eyes flipped from side to side. Her head rocked back and forth within a padded metal brace that circled the back of her head. Kara pulled a chair up next to Abby. Ragel lay on the floor. Kara reached out and stroked Abby's head like one might touch an infant. Her brown hair felt clean and soft. Spinal fluid had accumulated in Abby's skull because her brain tissue had atrophied, that is, shrunk, from a lack of oxygen. Like the sea coming in at high tide, spinal fluid replaced the space where her brain had once been, a condition called hydrocephalus. Kara closed her eyes. The dark energy sensation she experienced when coming into the room prevailed. She breathed intensely, her muscles tightened slightly, and her mental attention was on moderate alert. As she opened her eyes, she noticed a wavy, labored, grayish radiation, like heat rising from wet pavement in a new day's light. What, pray tell, is this? Thought Kara. Ragel noticed the phenomenon, too. His eyes were fixed on the perception as he sat up and followed the movement of the ashy illumination. The waves separated into particulates and rotated inwardly in a counterclockwise direction. It was as if Kara were looking at the formation of a tiny hurricane. The whirlwind continued, although there was no sound. The feeling in the room shifted. It shifted to a quiet stillness, which was an awareness in direct opposition to the initial foreboding upon entry into Abby's room. Kara's alert response softened. Kara glanced at Abby. Her form was completely quiet. Her eyes were not bouncing back and forth. Her head was stable, being held up by the cushioned metal brace. Abby, Abby. Kara accentuated and elongated the sound of Abby's name. The little squall of wavy particles expanded and moved up into the corner of the room, away from the small window, providing the minimal brightness. Kara addressed the whirlwind. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. Quietly and in a chanting manner, she repeated the Hawaiian prayer for forgiveness. Ho'oponopono is an ancient Hawaiian practice of forgiveness. It is both a communication concept for reconciliation and a tool for restoring self-love and balance. Kara uses this mantra when she employs touch therapy for transcendental healing. Abby's whirling energy slowed. Kara felt a tightening in her throat. A gasp, and she couldn't breathe. A gasp, and she couldn't breathe. Then everything quieted. Oh, someone tried to strangle Abby. Kara had just received an ethereal message designed as a physical encounter. The time for vacating the room was at hand. Kara spoke to Abby's transcendent form stationed at the corner of the ceiling. I love you, Abby. I am here. We will communicate, said Kara. A feeling of deep resonance came over Kara as she noticed Abby inhabit her vegetative body once again.
It was time to leave. Kara and Raguel walked to the door, knocked lightly, and Joanne clicked the key. Joanne, Kara, and Raguel walked silently until they reached the front entryway of the nursing home.
"Please turn toward the desk," instructed Joanne.
Kara complied immediately. A man in a uniform with a gun holstered at his waist passed behind Kara down the hall toward Abby's room.
"Okay, you and Raguel walk out the front door. I'll follow," whispered Joanne.
Once outdoors, Joanne explained that the guard was taking his place at Abby's room. If anyone saw Kara, they would focus on the service dog and not recognize the dog's handler. Joanne often gave tours of the facility. Kara was not to bring Raguel with her when she visited tomorrow with Abby's husband's attorney, Ralph Maynard.